Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about the stock markets. If you've been following what's happening in the markets, you'll know that there has been a big fall in stock prices all across the world towards the end of this week. And the shocks that we're seeing on the stock market are a direct result of what's going on in Ukraine right now. We've got really high levels of inflation, we've got concerns about rising interest rates and other issues with regards to quantitative easing. So in this video, we'll go through exactly what spooked the markets this week. I'll then go on to talk about some of the fundamentals that are really driving all of the concerns in the market. And that's really focusing in on the levels of inflation, what the anticipated moves in interest rates are going to be over the course of 2022, and what's happening with regards to the supply of money. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen over the next 3 to 6 months and what the general outlook is for both the stock markets and the economy. So before we get into all of that, if I can ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget, I always include chapters, so if there's a section you're not that interested in, really easy to skip over it. If you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below where you'll find links to Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and YouTube Super Thanks feature. The stock markets around the world have taken a battering this week. On Thursday the 18th of May, the Nasdaq index was down 4.73%, which is the biggest single one-day fall since June 2020 at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Dow Jones was also down 3.6%, and we've seen large falls in every single index around the world. So the question is, what spooked the markets? We've all been aware that what's going on in Ukraine is going to have a negative impact on the global economy. But what's triggered this massive sell-off of shares and everybody's concerns that the markets are about to crash? Well, the simple answer to that is the quarterly results from some of the US retailers. On the 17th of May, Walmart announced a 25% drop in its quarterly earnings and also cut its full-year profit outlook as a direct result of rising fuel and labor costs and also a change in habits from their customers. Walmart has over 5,000 stores and is seen as a barometer for the US economy as it commands a leading position in domestic grocery sales. As a result of this, investors look to Walmart for indications on the health of the US economy. And it's interesting that the chief executive of Walmart stated that he thought that the operating environment was unusual and the profit drop was unexpected. Interestingly, Walmart reported a 3% rise in same-store sales for the first quarter. However, its gross margin fell 38 basis points due to higher fuel and online delivery costs, and operating expenses rose 45 basis points due to an increase in stock and wage costs. Walmart has now reduced its second quarter forecast and expects that its full year 2023 earnings per share will fall by around 1% compared with its previous forecast of a 5% increase. So Walmart had already softened up the market and given investors a heads up that there were problems in the sector, but it was the results of Target, a major US department store, that really caused the negative sentiment and panic to start on the markets. Target is the 8th largest retailer in the USA and has over 1,900 stores and employs more than 400,000 employees. And the reason that the results from Target shocked the market is that they were far worse than results from Walmart. In the 3 months to April 2022, Target's quarterly profit halved, and the company warned that it was facing problems due to rising fuel and freight costs. Top line sales on a comparable basis were actually up 3.3% in the quarter. However, net income in the quarter fell from $2.1 billion last year to $1 billion this year, which meant that the adjusted earnings per share ratio was down 41% from this time last year. Target Chief Executive Brian Cornell said that consumers were changing their buying patterns. Toy sales were one of the strongest performing categories for Target, as families resumed bigger children's birthday parties, and luggage sales were also up more than 50%. However, discretionary items such as TVs, kitchen appliances, and bicycles dropped off as consumers shift their spending towards experience-based purchases like booking trips and buying gift cards for restaurants. In terms of the outlook for the next 12 months, Target have identified supply chain issues and estimate that their cost base will be up by more than $1 billion higher than they originally anticipated for this year. And just as a reminder, these set of results came after the results that we saw recently from the world's biggest retailer, Amazon. As with the other two retailers, the top line sales were in line with expectations and came in at $116 billion for the first quarter. However, at the operating level, Amazon reported a $3.8 billion loss compared to an $8.1 billion profit this time last year. So that represents a negative turnaround of $11.9 billion in the quarter. Now, $7.6 billion of that figure represents the loss that Amazon has booked on its Rivian shares. It has to mark to market those shares, and Rivian has had an absolute nightmare over the last 6 months or so. But that still leaves a $4.3 billion turnaround from where we were this time last year for Amazon. As part of the results, Amazon announced that it planned to close all 68 of its bookstores, pop-ups and other home goods shops, and has reduced its forecast sales figures for Q2 below market expectations. So it was the results from the retailers that triggered this sell-off of shares. And the reason behind it is that we can see that firstly, consumers are changing their buying patterns. They're starting to buy more own label products and cheaper goods and transfer down from the more expensive luxury items. And they're also pulling back from buying discretionary items. So if you don't need to replace your flat screen TV every 12 months, then you don't have to make that purchase. And so that will have a contracting effect on the economy. Now, we've all been fully aware of this situation for some time, but the markets like to have a blinkered approach. They like to pretend that everything is fine and nothing's going to go wrong. And it's only when these figures are released and we've got it proven to us in black and white that something happens in the markets. But when you look at the figures from the retailers, the top line sales were actually in line with expectations. It was the profits that were hit heavily. And the main reason for that was because of all the increased costs. So we've talked about that a lot on this channel. The increase in oil costs and gas costs and food prices is driving up inflation. And that means that the price of everything is increasing. So either the retailer passes on all of those price increases, or they have to absorb some of those costs and then make less profit. And that's what the retailers are doing right now. Because it's a very competitive market, the retailers have to keep a very close eye on the prices that they're selling goods for. So in the short term, to maintain their market positions, they've been taking the hit on all of the increased costs. But at some point, those costs will be passed on because the whole market can't continually absorb those costs. Otherwise, everybody becomes loss-making and all the businesses become bankrupt. And that's really what the markets have got spooked about. They're looking at the forecasts. They're looking at a reduction in forecast levels of sales and also profitability. And they know that the reason for that is because prices will go up. And that means that people will have less disposable income and there'll be less money in the economy. So to get under the skin of exactly what's going on here, we need to have a quick look at where we are with regards to inflation, interest rates, and quantitative easing. Inflation in most countries around the world is currently at the highest level it's been for at least 20 years. 30 years in some countries, 40 years in others. That tells you that there is a major problem right now. This table shows the current rates of inflation for the G20, which are the 20 largest economies around the world. If you follow the channel, you'll be fully aware of what's going on in Turkey, but an inflation rate of 70% is unbelievably high, totally unsustainable and off the scale. Argentina's not far behind at 58%, and that economy is also in crisis. And Russia we've talked about a lot, but inflation is likely to stay at very high levels in Russia whilst the war is going on. Brazil is the only other country in the G20 that has an official inflation rate of over 10% at the moment. The Netherlands is currently a whisker below 10%, and the United Kingdom has jumped up this table from the last time we looked at it, and 9% inflation is now the highest level that the United Kingdom has seen for 40 years. And that's despite the fact that they've seen four interest rate increases over the last 6 months. Spain and the USA are both currently at 8.3% and have both seen a fall in the rate of inflation over the last month or so. However, 8.3% is still incredibly high and is more than four times the target rate for both of those economies. Alongside the UK, India is also continuing to see inflation increasing and is now up to 7.8% compared with 7% where we were this time last month. Mexico has seen an increase to a similar level, and then the euro area as a whole, this is the average for all of the European countries, is coming in at 7.4%. Inflation in Canada in April increased slightly to 6.8%. South Africa's at 5.9%, Singapore at 5.4%, and Australia at 5.1% has seen one of the biggest percentage increases in inflation across the whole of this table. They've come from 3.5% to 5.1%. So that's a very worrying trend for Australia. So a lot of countries on the table we just looked at have had high levels for at least the last 3 to 6 months. And the problem with that is that it erodes the value of money. The cost of living is rising rapidly in all of those countries, and that's putting pressure on a lot of companies to increase their wages. But if you increase wages, it continues to fuel inflation. Because you give people more money, they then spend more money at the higher prices, and there is a danger that you have never-ending upward pressure on inflation. So the traditional way of solving this problem is to increase interest rates. When a country increases its official interest rate, that means that everybody that has debt that's linked to the rate of interest will have to pay more for that debt. It increases the monthly interest bill for consumers and industry, and therefore those individuals and companies will have less disposable income. And the logic is that if you have less disposable income, that means you will spend less, therefore there will be less demand, and that should bring prices back down. On the flip side of the higher debt costs, higher interest rates should attract more investment and savings because the people in your country will be encouraged to put their money in the banks because they'll get paid more interest. And external investors will see your country as being more attractive from an investment perspective. This table shows the official interest rate in all of the countries of the G20. So it's interesting to note that the four countries with the highest rates of interest are also the four countries with the highest rates of inflation, but they're not in exactly the same order. Turkey currently has the highest rate of inflation at 70%. However, if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that Turkey have been following a contrarian approach and have actually been reducing their interest rates at a time of high inflation, and that's had an absolutely disastrous impact on the rate of inflation. It has gone from around 20% to 70% during the period that Turkey have reduced its interest rates. So that is not working. Argentina's current rate of inflation is 58%, and they've got 49% interest rates. So both of those metrics are completely off the scale. Things are out of control in Argentina right now. We've talked about Russia previously, and Brazil currently has inflation of 12.1% and an official interest rate of 12.75%. The next three countries on this list, Mexico, India, and South Africa, have interest rates that are broadly in line with what their inflation is. So there is a direct correlation. But what's really interesting about this chart is that the countries in North America and Europe that currently have inflation that is at 7, 8, 9% have extremely low rates of interest. The official rate of interest in the USA, Canada, and the United Kingdom is currently 1%. However, the rate of inflation is 8.3% in the US, 6.8% in Canada, and 9% in the UK. So there is a massive gap between the rate of inflation and the rate of interest. And the situation in Europe is even worse than that. The EU currently operates a collective interest rate program. So it is applying an interest rate amongst all of its 27 members. And that rate is currently 0%. The average rate of inflation in the euro area is currently 7.4%. But we've actually got a couple of countries, Spain at 8.3% and the Netherlands at 9.6%, that are above that figure. So what that data is telling us is that there is currently no correlation between the rates of inflation and the rates of interest in North America and Europe. And in order to bring the inflation down, the rates of interest are going to have to move up rapidly. And that's why a lot of the markets are very concerned. They're looking at the situation right now. They're looking at runaway inflation. And the markets have realized that there needs to be a massive hike in interest rates. And Jerome Powell from the Fed came out and said this recently, that he no longer has a firm limit on the amount that he will increase interest rates in order to address inflation. Previously, the markets were factoring in 25 basis points or maybe a 50 basis point hike per review. However, now all bets are off, and it looks like we could see more aggressive increases more often than expected. The other factor that we need to talk about is quantitative easing. Now, if you follow the channel, you'll know that we've covered off this topic a lot, so I'm not going to go into it in a lot of detail right now. But quantitative easing was brought in originally at the time of the credit crunch back in 2009 in the USA and a number of other countries, and has been reintroduced during the COVID period, really to stimulate the economy. And when a central bank operates quantitative easing, it goes into the markets and buys treasury bonds. And by doing so, that increases the price of bonds and reduces yields, which bring down interest rates. And it also puts cash into the hands of the financial institutions, which encourages them to lend it to corporates and individuals. And by having that cash, those people and companies will spend in the economy, and it fuels the growth of the economy. And this program has been very successful over the last couple of years whilst we've been struggling with the COVID pandemic. However, the problem with quantitative easing is that it does drive up inflation. And some of the inflation rates that we've got right now are as a result of the quantitative easing programs. So where we've got to now is the main focus for all of these central banks is to reduce inflation. And they've started with the interest rate increases, but the other big factor is they're now switching off quantitative easing. And they've reversed the policy, and it's now called quantitative tightening. And it's the opposite impact. So they're now selling bonds into the market, which means that the bond prices will fall, the yields therefore go up, and that increases interest rates. By selling those bonds, the financial institutions will be the buyers. That means they will have less cash. Therefore, they will make less cash available to consumers and companies, and it has a contracting impact on the economy. And what we've got right now all across the world is all the major economies have announced that they are now going for quantitative tightening. So the USA has already announced it's starting its program, as has the UK, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the list goes on. And what that will do is it will reduce the circulation of money, it will make liquidity tighter, and it will mean that economies contract, and it should bring down inflation in normal circumstances. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because it's big news when stock markets start crashing. It starts being publicized all over the place, and it causes an element of panic. People start becoming worried that they need to cash in their portfolios and move out of stocks and into cash, buy gold, all of those good things. So I wanted to make sure that everybody understood what's going on. And it's no real surprise because we've been talking for months on this channel about what's been going on in the economy. And the increase in the cost of oil and gas and food and commodities is going to have a negative impact on absolutely every company in the world. So there will be a struggle to maintain profit margins at the same level. As I discussed earlier, a company either has the choice of passing on all of the cost increases directly to consumers or to absorb some of those costs. If you pass the costs on directly, you run the risk of becoming uncompetitive. If you're the only supermarket on the road who increases their prices, then you will lose business because everybody else will take those customers. And the logic from your competitors will be that even though they're operating at lower profit margins, if they can increase the absolute number of customers, then they could possibly make the same amount of profit. That's the idea. But we've got a situation with supermarkets right now where none of the retailers are really passing on all of the cost increases. They're absorbing some of them. And so they're now suffering the pain of lost profits. Now, that's not a sustainable situation. And at some point, somebody will have to start increasing prices, passing on the full amount of these cost increases. And then once all of the supermarkets do that, then we are at a position where prices are at a new all-time high. Now, it's really concerning to everybody because the current rates of inflation that we've got are based upon existing prices. But if we've got a lot of costs that are still being absorbed by companies, we've got more price increases to come. And that's one of the reasons that the markets are getting spooked. They know that the prolonged war in Ukraine means that we've got this period now of very high prices all around the world. And those increase in prices will end up being passed through by all companies at some point. So we're all facing the prospect of having to pay more for things in the future. Now, the problem that we've got is that the traditional way to solve inflation is to increase interest rates and also to reduce quantitative easing. That would solve the situation in a normal set of circumstances. However, we don't have a normal set of circumstances. We are in a wartime environment right now. The reason that the price of oil and food and other commodities has gone up so much is because of what's going on in Ukraine. We've seen shortages of supply. We've seen changes to the way countries are buying their oil and gas. We're seeing changes to the supply chain. We're seeing sanctions against Russia. All of those things are having a really negative impact on prices. So if a country increases its interest rates, it won't automatically solve the inflation problem. Because if inflation is being driven by these macroeconomic factors, by the war in Ukraine, causing all of your borrowers to have a higher interest bill at the end of each month because you've increased the rate of interest, won't actually solve that problem. It may reduce demand in your country for oil or certain items, or it may shift buying patterns so people start using their car less, or they decide to downgrade in terms of the type of foods that they're buying. They may decide not to eat out as often and factors like that. So there will be a contraction in terms of consumer spending, but that doesn't automatically translate to a reduction in prices and a reduction in inflation if that inflation is being driven by world shortages, if it's being caused because the wheat supplies just aren't sufficient and therefore the price of flour has increased 50%. Increasing your interest rate and changing quantitative easing programs won't solve that problem, unfortunately. So the stock market falls that we've seen this week are likely to keep coming. They don't tend to come in a prolonged steady pattern. They tend to come in jolts and shocks. So we may well see the markets bounce back over the next week or two as everybody kids themselves that nothing actually is going on and everything's going to be fine and it's business as usual. And then all of a sudden we'll have some results from somebody else which will shock the market and we'll see another 2 or 3 or 5% fall in prices. But over the next 3 to 6 months, I'm expecting the markets to come down. As interest rates go up, generally markets go down because treasury bills become more attractive and the cost of borrowing goes up for companies. Therefore, their profits go down because they're spending more money on debt and therefore they don't have as much to be able to distribute in the form of dividends. So it's likely, I think, over the next 3 to 6 months that we will see the markets coming down and we will also see at some point a recession in the Western world. It's inevitable. We can't cope with the level of oil prices and commodity prices that we've got right now. It's just not sustainable. So there will be a shock. There will be a recession. Unfortunately, when we talk about recessions, it's usually dealing in old data. So we have to wait for the quarterly results to come out and we need 2 consecutive quarters of falling GDP for it to be an official recession. So we're likely to be in recession a long time before we are officially in recession. We could even be in recession right now, but we don't have the data to be able to prove that. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when they happen. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Hey guys, just a very quick update on Joe Blogs 2. I mentioned in a previous posting that we had 4,000 hours and I was ready to move to the monetization. However, YouTube seemed to assess the eligible hours in a slightly different manner when you come to apply. So even though the total is showing as 4,100, YouTube are saying that I have 3,965 right now. So even though I asked everybody to stop watching, I need you to jump back onto the channel, maybe watch one or two of the videos, just build up a little bit more watch time. I need about another 50 hours, which shouldn't take too much time and effort. But unfortunately, they haven't signed off on it yet, so I can't apply for the monetization and start the experiment yet. So sorry about this, really sorry to repost this. But we haven't quite got there. I thought we did, but YouTube have decided we haven't. Some of the watch time wasn't eligible for some reason. I've no idea how YouTube assesses these things. But if you can, if you've got time, please jump over, watch one or two of the videos, maybe click on the playlist. We'll get through that 4,000 hours and then I will register and then we can start this experiment for real. So thanks very much for watching this part of the video and for watching this whole video all the way to the end.